Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I am Professor Clyde Chant, one of the world's leading authorities on reptilian behavior. I have studied crocodilians on four continents: Africa, South America, North America, and my native Australia. I possess advanced degrees from six universities and have earned my doctori residentia from Rosebud Institute of Science and Technology in Liverpool, Brighton, England. What you have before you in this metal tank is a male specimen of the genus Alligator from the family Alligatoridae. More specifically, this specimen is an American alligator, Alligator mississippiensis. Alligators first appeared during the Oligocene epoch about 37 million years ago. That means this is a creature of the time of tooth and claw, kill or be killed, when raw, brutal strength mattered more than cunning and intelligence. An average adult male American alligator weighs 800 pounds and is about 15 feet long. The specimen in the metal tank is just above average, weighing 827 pounds and measures 15 feet, 3 inches. The longest alligator that science has ever studied was 20 feet long and weighed nearly 1,000 pounds. Alligators are cold-blooded reptiles. Their bodies do not produce heat. They warm themselves by lying in the sun. In Louisiana and in Florida, you often see hundreds of them lying on the banks of a pond or river, sunning themselves. But don't be fooled. While they lay in the sun to warm themselves, they seem peaceful. But alligators are deadly hunters with incredibly quick reflexes and huge strength. They are pure muscle beneath their scaly skin. This specimen has claws the size of a man's hand and hundreds of the very sharpest teeth. Once an alligator has grabbed its prey, it begins a death roll, rolls its prey in the water until the prey drowns and can no longer breathe. By using its death roll, an alligator can kill very large animals like a horse or a bull or even a bear. Get close and it grabs you, then rolls you over and over in the water until you drown. Male alligators, like this one, live solitary lives. They get aggressive if another alligator comes around. They have even been known to eat other alligators. In that regard, they are cannibals. A question that I'm often asked is whether alligators eat humans. The answer is yes. If a human is in a canoe or a small boat, alligators will bump it to tip it over, knocking the people into the water, then grab them, and then do a death roll to kill them. Another question that I am often asked is, what are alligators good for? Well, alligator boots are very expensive. I know. I have seen them for sale in the Marshall Field Store in Chicago. Very expensive, but very beautiful. And alligators are good to eat. The people of the Louisiana bayous eat alligator all the time. They tell me that it tastes good, sort of like chicken. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I will attempt an act of exemplary bravery. I will attempt to feed this terrible beast from eons past. I'll climb this ladder, and if we are lucky, the specimen will jump up and grab his meal. Be ready, be careful. Remember, this is a predator with the very quickest reflexes. What about it, boy? Are you hungry? How about a tasty chicken? Show the people your beautiful, scaly green body. Show it all. Jump!
In rural mining communities like Boise, Colorado, the arrival of the Alligator Man created a community-wide celebration. How could any of the Lithuanian miners continue to work in the deep, hard rock silver mine when there was a real, live alligator in town? Gotta see that. Alligators were hardly rare in places like Florida or the bayous of Louisiana, and almost anyone who visited a zoo in one of the major eastern cities could see a tropical display featuring gators. But Here in the high western Rockies, the alligator was a very rare sight. The alligator came courtesy of a showman and promoter named Clyde Chant, who claimed to have a PhD in reptile herpetology from a university that no one had ever heard of. Professor Chant, as he preferred to be called, traveled among the mining towns of the West, driving a 1917 Ford truck, pulling a large, brightly painted metal tank filled with water and containing a 15-foot alligator. He charged patrons 15 cents each to watch his demonstrations of the reptile's cunning capabilities. Each demonstration ended with Professor Chant climbing a tall metal ladder next to the alligator's tank, and then holding out a long fishing pole with a hunk of chicken attached to it. He would encourage the animal to perform, and within a minute or two, the alligator would jump up out of the water 10 feet or more and grab its meal from the end of the pole. In the evenings, after the last feeding demonstration, local children would often slip beneath the canvas fence that the professor had set up to block the view of the non-paying spectators, and in a mixture of awe and fear, watch the alligator. Appaloosa Radio Online offers Alligator a story from Nell Trussman's magazine, Broken Tree Tales.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, I will attempt an act of exemplary bravery. I will attempt to feed this terrible beast from eons past. I'll climb this ladder, and, if we are lucky, the specimen will jump up and grab its meal. Be ready. Be careful. Remember, this is a predator with the very quickest reflexes. What about it, boy? Are you hungry? How about a tasty chicken? Show the people your scaly body. Show it all. Jump.
In rural mining communities like Boise, Colorado, the arrival of the alligator man created a community-wide celebration. How could any of the Lithuanian miners continue to work in the deep, hard rock silver mine when there was a real, alive alligator in town? Gotta see that. Alligators were hardly rare in places like Florida or the bayous of Louisiana. And almost anyone who visited a zoo in one of the major eastern cities could see a tropical display featuring gators. But, here in the high western Rockies, the alligator was a very rare sight. The alligator came courtesy of a showman and promoter named Clyde Chant, who claimed to have a PhD in reptile herpetology from a university that no one had ever heard of. Professor Chant, as he preferred to be called, traveled among the mining towns of the West driving a 1917 Ford truck, pulling a large, brightly painted metal tank filled with water and containing a 15-foot alligator. He charged patrons 15 cents each to watch his demonstrations of the reptile's cunning capabilities. Each demonstration ended with Professor Chant climbing a tall metal ladder next to the alligator's tank, and then holding out a long fishing pole with a hunk of chicken attached to it. He would encourage the animal to perform, and within a minute or two, the alligator would jump up out of the water 10 feet or more and grab its meal from the end of the pole. In the evenings, after the last feeding demonstration, local children would often slip beneath the canvas fence that the professor had set up to block the view of the non-paying spectators, and in a mixture of awe and fear, watch the alligator. Sometimes the alligator would thrash about, causing lots of giggles and screams. Most often, however, the gator would float in the tank with only its eyes and snout protruding above the water. Nothing could be more fearful than seeing those eyes floating just above the tank's water, illuminated for brief instances either by a distant flickering kerosene lamp or the slanting light of the moon. Nothing could be more fearful than seeing those eerie, iridescent eyes floating just above the tank's water, illuminated for the briefest of instances by a distant, flickering kerosene lantern. Sheer terror. Pee in your pants fear. A monster from ages past. Teeth. Claws. Terrible eyes. Of course, in the isolated mining community of boys, as in all such places, older siblings would take particular delight in tormenting younger ones. Tormenting them about the possibility of the alligator escaping its tank, and then coming ravenously after them. Devouring the little ones. In just one quick bite. Such torment would continue for weeks after Professor Chant had closed the lid of the tank and hitched it again to the back of his Model T truck and moved on to the next town. Boys, Colorado was a silver mining complex with deep mines and a stamping mill that crushed ore 24 hours a day. It sat at an altitude of nearly 8,000 feet, and winter often arrived early. So in mid-September 1922, when Professor Chant and his alligator motored into town, there was already a chill in the air. As soon as the reptile demonstrations were over, the professor buttoned his coat tightly and immediately sought the refuge of the wooden sleeping shed that he had constructed on the bed of his Model T truck. The professor was not a tall man, so he could rest almost comfortably on the mattress he had laid over the shed's wooden floors. By closing the door tightly, the sleeping shed was cozy and reasonably warm. During the last demonstration, the professor had noticed that the alligator was somewhat more lethargic than usual, but like people, reptiles have moods. And, speaking of moods, the professor was in one himself.
The tank in this town is lousy. Only 90 cents from the last demonstration. Not enough to pay for gasoline, and food, and chicken for the alligator. Cross this place off my itinerary. Lousy take. Really lousy.
The professor was cold and in a foul mood. He retreated into the sleeping shed and took a long swig from the bottle of Old Grandad that he had bought from a bootlegger in Denver.
A man can't even take a drink anymore. This damned prohibition.
The professor was cold and in a foul mood. He retreated into the sleeping shed and took a long swig from the bottle of Old Grandad that he had bought from a bootlegger in Denver. One swig became two, then three. He was warmer and his mood had improved. But now all he wanted to do was to sleep. Had the professor checked the temperature of the water in the metal tank, he would have noticed that it was considerably colder than the alligator preferred. And, had the professor been in a better mood, he would have closed the lid on the alligator's tank and latched it as an extra precaution. The silver mine in Boise, Colorado was petering out, and during the previous spring, the Lithuanian miners had their wages cut in half. No one had enough to spend on extras like watching the professor feed his alligator. Had he known of the economic plight of the town, the professor would not have taken the long and very winding road up the steep mountain. Next time, he would cross Boise off his itinerary. While almost no one paid the 15 cents to watch the demonstration, the interest among the town's children remained unabated. Well, after the professor had sought refuge in his sleeping shed, a small group of daring boys slipped under the canvas fence with a miner's flashlight. They wanted to see how very close they could come to the alligator. One or two of them might even be daring enough to try to touch it. The deed would have to be quick, since everyone knew that a gator has lightning quick reflexes and could instantly turn and kill in any direction. When the boys had lifted the canvas fence, they were astonished to find that instead of being in the water-filled tank, the alligator was lying on the ground, just behind one of the wheels of the tank's trailer. When the boys flashed the flashlight, they caught the unmistakable glimmer of the animal's eyes. Now approaching a docile alligator in his water tank represents one level of risk, but finding the animal on the ground, ready to strike, represented a magnitude greater threat. The danger was too great for even the bravest boy. In the briefest of instants, they all scattered in a variety of directions, yelling and screaming as they did. In their haste to depart, they dropped the flashlight. It fell a mere 3 feet from where the reptile waited. In all of their initial bravado, and then random fear, the boys had not noticed that they were being trailed by the soon-to-be 2-year-old Lillian. Lillian was as fascinated by the alligator as the older boys were. And like them, she wanted to touch it. However, when the boys scattered, Lillian stayed put. After they were gone, she made her own approach toward the creature, moving closer and closer and closer. When the boys scattered, little Lillian stayed. After they were gone, she made her own approach toward the creature, moving toward it, wanting to touch it. It was a flower before the frightened gaggle of boys made it back to their own homes and told everyone about the escaped alligator. In the company of their fathers and older brothers, they returned to the metal water tank. Sure enough, the alligator was on the ground, its mouth was open, and it was looking ready to attack. The gathered miners immediately noticed the flashlight, with its dim light still pointing out in the dark. Then, just to the right of the flashlight, they saw her shoe. Baby Lillian's shoe. They grabbed a long pole and poked at the alligator to get it to move back. When it did, they saw that the massive reptile had been lying on Lillian's doll. Everyone in Boise knew that doll, and everyone knew that Lillian would not go anywhere without it. She clung to it always. The Alligator Man had been to Boyce in years past. Everyone remembered how the professor had described the vicious jaws of the reptile, how it could crush a tractor's tire in one snap. And how the alligator ate its food whole, gulping it down without chewing it. Immediately, the onlookers imagined the terrible crushing teeth coming down on the little girl. They imagined her being swallowed whole in just a couple of gulps. Then, with the evidence clearly before him, the town's constable decided to act. He ran the 35 steps to his office, grabbed his shotgun, raced to a spot with a clear view, and began firing away at the alligator. Meanwhile, the commotion had awakened the professor from his deep, alcohol-assisted sleep. He emerged from his sleeping shed disheveled and somewhat disoriented. He had taken about 3 steps toward the metal water tank when the constable began to fire the shotgun. 2 blasts, unload, reload, 2 more for absolute certainty. As he saw his cherished alligator disintegrate into bloody pieces, Clyde Chant began to cry. Not a cry of outrage, like "What the blazes are you doing?" Not a cry of "Woe is me, now my financial future is ruined." No, he began to sob like one sobs in losing very close kin, say a wife or brother. It was not as if the alligator had been a pet. Hard for such a beast to be a man's pet. But a kinship had developed, years of caring for it and thousands of demonstrations had given the two a distinct kinship, one that Clyde Chant was now weeping for. The town, on the other hand, was beginning its own grief over little Lillian. Prayers in muffled Lithuanian speech were everywhere. She was such a sweet little girl. Always carried that one doll everywhere. We'll all miss her so much. But, in actuality, Lillian had not been eaten by the fearsome alligator. In fact, she had sneaked into her aunt's house and then hidden herself in the flower bin. Once she had squeezed into the bin, she became stuck. They found her there about an hour and a half after all the commotion. She had been afraid that the gator would get her, so she had not cried out. When the alligator had turned its head toward her, little Lillian ran away in the opposite direction. In so doing, she had left her shoe and her dolly behind. That evening, everyone in Boyce was incredibly happy. They celebrated in bold Lithuanian style with hard drink and dancing until dawn. Everyone celebrated, that is, except Professor Clyde Chant. He drained all of the water from the metal tank, noting its many new holes. At the first glimmer of dawn, he hitched up the tank, and then gave the Model T a couple of hard turns on the crank. It spit and hissed for a moment in the thin mountain air, but then started its spurring. The professor buttoned up his coat tight, and began the long, steep descent down the mountain. They could hear the empty trailer banging up and down over the rocks, until the Ford finally reached the paved highway leading toward Grand Junction. Claude Champ turned his vehicle right and never visited Boyce again. Thank you.
Boise, Colorado disappeared when its silver mine closed, and the mine owners filed for bankruptcy about 5 years later. Today, what was once a Lithuanian mining town is a high-end ski resort with what is reported to be the best powder snow in the Rockies. Modern herpetologists believe that the alligator left its metal tank because it sought a warmer place. They say that it probably never had any intention of attacking the little girl. It did not need to hunt since the professor kept it so full of chicken. This is a Nell Trustman story from her Broken Tree Tales Western magazine.